What is up, people? It is Tony in the Field, Season 4, Episode 2. Preston Highfield and Anthony Piganelli with you, taping on a Wednesday in mid-September. I'm in beautiful Portland, Oregon. AP is in the Bermuda Triangle, known as New Orleans, which to me appears to be some kind of, you know, Vegas, Southern California, and then just Southern United States trifecta. Combination is that pretty accurate, AP? I've never been to New Orleans.
Yeah, it's about right. I'd say it's definitely like its own kind of personality in the South for sure. It's you can't really like group it in with any of the other southern states, but it definitely has the humidity of something in the South. A lot of culture here, though. A lot of diverse culture.
That's good stuff. So today on the pod, we got the NFL back. To just wake up on Sunday morning and turn on the red zone, wasn't it? I mean, I know that's what I did on Sunday for about 3 hours before I went to work.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, huh? I'm glad the NFL's back. Just I don't have red zone. I got this just total hogwash rubbish dorm cable that I'm living in. I'm living in a graduate dorm over here in Louisiana because I'm going to Tulane. My cable gives me like the local game, so I just get to see like the Saints stink it up every Sunday, unfortunately. But I remember the red zone days. They were great.
The Saints. There you go. Yeah, that was a tough L for the Saints. All right. This is what we got coming up on the pod, Season 4, Episode 2. We got the NFL back and some really bad quarterback performances that we'll break down in depth. We will get to the legend known as Sergio Dip, who made his national TV debut, or at least his most illuminated national TV debut, on the second Monday Night Football game, which was an interesting broadcast all the way around, to say the least. We'll get to that. College football is back. Baker Mayfield just stabbing the Oklahoma flag into Ohio State's carpet, which I absolutely love. We'll get to that. We'll do our Beaver breakdown of the week, which is, I think, becoming a fan favorite segment here, AP. The fans have been blowing us up. We almost did an emergency Beaver breakdown on Sunday morning, but it didn't quite work out timing-wise. But this is quickly becoming a borderline award-winning segment amongst our viewers.
You got to give the fans what they want, right? Our boy Pierce Fettig, shout out Pierce Fettig. He was greasing us up about that segment. He said it was one of the funniest things he's ever heard. And that guy just lives and breathes sports talk radio like we do, and sports television and just sports media in general. I got a lot of other positive feedback from it as well. I think people just, I mean, a lot of our friends and viewers that watch, that listen to the show, that they're Duck fans, so, and they don't like the Beavers. They recognize how sorry the Beavers are like we do. And so they enjoy those rants. But I think anyone really can enjoy that. Even Beaver fans can relate to those rants because they know how terrible the team is. They know how much of a fraud Gary Anderson is. They know how sorry it is when you almost lose to Portland State and get outgained by 200 yards at home to a team that's an FCS school.
Yeah. No, totally. There's just no way to disagree with our takes here on the Beavers. So we will get to that. We got a couple of really funny games planned for that segment too. We got Jamel Hill on Twitter calling out Trump, getting political, which to me, I mean, it's not a huge surprise. It's kind of what the Six has been all about in general. There was a really good article written on The Ringer by Brian Curtis, which I read today, and AP and I will share our take on that situation and maybe on the Six in general and ESPN in general with how they handle this stuff. All right. Ranking the top 10 and bottom 10 journalists. So my dude, CJ McCollum, called out some journalists, basically called out like the collective NBA journalists for the recent NBA rankings, which have come out every year for the last 7 years, and they're not to the top yet, but they're through like 30 through 100 right now. And you got Carmelo Anthony behind Lonzo Ball and some other, I didn't even think that was that bad. There's some other notable players who Carmelo's behind that you could definitely make an argument about what's going on there. So we'll get to that. And then we're going to give our lists of the bottom 10 journalists. I'm not 100% sure where that segment is going. I haven't put too much thought into it. I think I'm just going to kind of let that one roll off the tongue there.
Yeah, we and can then let AP, that one
you got AP, you have a rant on DraftKings that apparently we're going to get to.
This is an annual thing with me, but this year more than ever, I thought that DraftKings, I don't want to spoil it right now by saying it, but basically in a nutshell, I thought that DraftKings was kind of, you know, I thought they were done for when all those lawsuits came in and I was never happier. And then they've just come out of the dungeon to become relevant again. So it is very disheartening to learn that DraftKings is once again on the rise and becoming a prominent annoyance in my life.
You weren't trying to sign up for that $1 billion sweepstakes?
$1 billion sweepstakes, dude. That's almost as fake as Gary Anderson. Are you kidding me? That's all fake right. News.
Let's get this thing
started. That is total
let's get
fake
this thing
news.
Started. Before we start, we need a quick interaction from LeVar Ball and Stephen A. Smith.
50 plus wins.
You must be. What? What did you just, what did you just say? Wait, have you?
He can fit 50 out of 80 games.
I'm going to get somebody drug test. I'm going to get somebody drug test. You must be crazy.
But you know what?
You must be crazy.
I have to be crazy. How'd I make?
All right. So that will get us started as we begin season two or season four, episode two of Tony in the Field. All right, Tony, let's bring the heat. The NFL's back. Best week one games and headlines go.
Well, you'd have to start with, do you start? There's a lot there. A lot of good games for the most part, a couple of stinkers. I don't know. You have to start with the Chiefs beating the Patriots, right? Like that, I mean, not only was it just the first game to kick off the season on that Thursday Night Football opener, but you'd have to argue that that was the most impressive game of the weekend. I mean, the Patriots, they were greasing up the fact that they'd beaten the Falcons in the Super Bowl, coming back from 28-3 down. I mean, you would have thought that they had just basically ended world hunger or you know, conquered world peace. Anything of that magnitude, they were just absolutely greasing it up over there in Foxborough. And then the Chiefs came in there and just kicked their ass. I absolutely loved it. So that game was awesome. Alex Smith looking like Tom Brady looking like, for lack of a better word, Alex Smith, or even some worse quarterbacks. Some dude on the Chiefs, rookie running back, that if you don't know his name, like I didn't before Thursday, you sure know it now. He went for a fantasy record and a rookie record, just absolutely tore it up. And the rest of their team looked amazing as well. I thought that was by far the best game of the weekend.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you, and it was that Thursday night game which stands alone, and like having a great game on national television when it's like all alone, like either a Monday night, a Sunday night, or a Thursday game, can sometimes, you know, just change the fan perception, not the perception within the league, because, or even with NFL experts who religiously watch the NFL, but it can change the perception amongst, like, you know, your basic fan or your basic sports talk radio dude. Who only watches every now and then Alex Smith play, and the general consensus around Alex Smith was like, all right, this guy's a check down king, which is totally true. I mean, we have seen
huge check down king.
We've seen the Chiefs time and time again just lose a playoff game by scoring 16 points or something like that. And it's like, all right, you guys need to open up the offense a little bit more if you ever want to be successful.
If it's 3rd and 10, Alex Smith is throwing a 5-yard out and they're punting.
Right, totally.
I mean, that's been the Chiefs' MO for the past, like, what, 3-4 years since Smith has gotten there?
Totally. And so for them to do that, I mean, dude, the Patriots' defense looked lost. And I know they have some injuries, and I know Dante Hightower is a really good player for them, was banged up. But, dude, I mean, Alex Smith, that was I don't watch Alex Smith every weekend, but you could argue that was the best game he has ever played of football in his entire life. To torch the Pats, the defending Super Bowl champs, for 368 yards and 4 touchdowns like that. I mean, that was literally like as good as I've ever seen that dude play. And you're right, dude, the Pats were greasing it up pregame. They had Mark Wahlberg there to announce some random stuff on Sunday Night Football, on Thursday Night Football. They had, you know, the fans, you know, just crazy with the Goodell towels. Shout out to El Prez. They had the banner getting hung. I mean, everything was set up It's like when an NBA team gets their rings the first night of the regular season the next year and then just gets waxed at home. That's basically what happened on Thursday, except it was by a team that you didn't really expect. I mean, the Chiefs are good, but they're just kind of an afterthought in general. So, yeah, obviously that game was really good. One game that was kind of close, honestly, that like I wasn't super pumped about any of the other games this weekend. Two other games really stood out to me, though. The Falcons-Bears game was like really, really close until the end, randomly. And then the Jags-Texans. I mean, the Texans' offensive line. What the bleep were they thinking the whole game? That the Jags had 10 sacks. 10 sacks. And
you didn't make that stat up, right? That's a real stat? That's real
news?
Yeah,
that's a real stat. Calais Campbell, who they just paid, had you know, like three or four sacks, I think. Yeah, dude, that was, I mean, that was
keep in mind,
really,
this is, keep
really
in mind,
bad.
This is like the rally game for Houston, right? Like, this is the whole Hurricane Harvey came and wrecked our city. We're doing this one for Houston. J.J. Watt has the flag running out. The stadium is fire. It is absolutely electric in there. And then they come out and lay an egg to the Jags of all team. Like, that is one of the most unseen things that I've seen in sports in a while. Like, who could have possibly predicted that, right?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's not like Bortles just torched him or anything. He was 11 for 21 for 125 yards.
Sorry, he shouldn't even be in the league anymore.
Yeah, I can't believe he is either. Do you want to transition to our sorry quarterback performances? Because we had a lot of them this weekend. That was part of what made this weekend, I don't want to call it a dud, but it was just kind of like, you know, when you watch college football and you see him score, you know, 60 points in a game or something, it's kind of fun. Like, you know, the defenses aren't great, but it's kind of fun. But there were some pretty bad QB performances, and that game had two of the worst, with Bortles 11 for 21, 125 yards and a TD, and Tom, how the heck is he still in the league, Savage, with 7 for 13 and 62 yards.
That's not another. That sounds like a Brock Osweiler stat right there. I thought they got rid of Osweiler.
Dude, how? I'm serious. How is Tom Savage in the league? Like, no joke. He was
you
not
could say,
very good.
You could say
he was not very good in college.
You could say, how is this dude in the league to like 10 different quarterbacks at this point? I mean, it is an absolute joke how many quarterbacks are not only on rosters but are getting legitimate burn. I would agree with you in terms of this week. I think I spoke too soon when I said there were a decent amount of good games, or really only a few. I just think that like some of the shockers, like the Chiefs game, kind of made the weekend a little bit better than it actually was. The Monday night game was good between the Broncos and the Chargers. I thought that was a great, great finish there. Shout out to the Raiders. That was probably the other one that caught my eye the most, just because not only am I a Raiders fan, but that was a great finish. It was great to see Marshawn Lynch come back and running hard. Other than that, a lot of sorry games, man. And I think this is a good time to transition into our sorry quarterback segment. What the hell are some of these quarterbacks doing still in the league, Preston?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'm very confused at why Savage is still in the league. I've pointed this out. I mean, I've been on the why is Tom Savage still in the league train for years now. Because I remember the dude at Rutgers wasn't any good. He wasn't any good at Pitt. And Scott Tolzien is another one. I'm a little bit confused what exactly he's bringing to the table.
He brought two pick sixes to the table on Sunday. That's what he brought to the table. Throw two pick sixes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wilton Spate did it for Michigan a couple weeks ago.
Wilton Spate is another example of a sorry quarterback. That dude, yeah. but he'll probably find a backup job in the league, because that's just what bad quarterbacks do.
If you're giant, if you're like 6'6", 235, scouts are like, all right, yeah, let's just have him hold a clipboard. We can get to college football quarterbacks later, but
it's intangibles.
What about
the intangibles?
What about... Here was a somewhat surprising result. The Seahawks laying an egg on offense did not shock me at all, because their offense just hasn't been good for a long time.
Their offensive line isn't good. They just can't protect Russell Wilson at all. That is the one thing that Seahawks fans won't admit. The defense is great. Russell Wilson's great. Special teams are great. The offense is there. They have the talent. They just literally cannot block. I mean, their offensive line has been like Swiss cheese for the past 3 years. There's so many holes in it.
And it's weird. They keep drafting and trading for offensive linemen. It's like none of it works. None of the pieces have worked. But no, I totally agree. I do think as much as he's interesting, I'll say that on Instagram and social media and in interviews, I think he's pretty fake. I'm on the Russillo train. I do think that he is a really good quarterback. He just has to run for his life every game. But anyways, that's not where I wanted to go. I wanted to go with a game between two established quarterbacks who were bad. Joe Flacco, 9 for 17, 121 yards against the Bengals, and Andy Dalton, 16 for 31 for 170 yards, but 5 turnovers, including 4 picks.
I actually had forgotten about off the
field
this game.
Nearly every possession, he was booed off the field.
I actually forgot about this game and a solid 28.4 quarterback rating. No, rating. That's just his rating. His actual QBR, which is a different metric. You want to take a stab at what that was? You won't even come close to guessing it. It was 0.7.
No, I think I heard someone say it was like 0 point something.
That's got to be a record. 0 TDs, 4 interceptions, as you alluded to. Now, see, this would be one thing if that were, you know, someone of the talent level of like a Scott Tolzien, and then you just laugh and not think twice about it, right? But a dude like Andy Dalton, who has been in the league for he's a veteran now, and he's been to the Pro Bowl. He's led this offense for a while. He's been to the playoffs. How are you throwing 4 interceptions and no touchdowns in week one to open the season? You've been there before. What are you doing? And the Bengals are a team that really, they don't have any more room for error. Like, Marvin Lewis should have been fired 3 years ago. Right. This is it. Like, this is for sure it for Dalton and Lewis and every other bum on that team that can't get it together.
There's your Bengals rant, courtesy of AP. No, I agree. I think if I was like one of their defenders on the team, I'd be so fed up. It was like 2 or 3 years ago where people were making the argument that they had like the most talented roster in the league, given, you know, the skill position guys on offense like AJ Green and some good tight ends, and then the sick defense that they had, and they haven't done anything. A lot of that probably falls on Dalton. All right. We have to, let me see if I can bring the audio up really fast. We have to get to before we move on from the NFL, to Sergio Dip. This dude was trending on Twitter like you wouldn't believe. He gained tens of thousands of followers for his flub up on Monday Night Football. And if you haven't seen it by now or heard it by now, then you probably just haven't been paying a ton of close attention to sports media. But here we go. I have audio of it. Let's take a listen.
Pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL, and here he is having the time of his life this night, making his head coaching debut.
So there it is, AP. What was your first reaction when you heard that?
My first reaction was, okay, please be a foreigner. Please tell me that English is not his language, and it's not. I realized that later that Spanish is his first language. But I honestly didn't understand what was going on at all. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Like, I don't know what he was even trying to say, let alone like understand completely to do. Did you take away anything from that? Did you take away like a single thing from that sideline report? That's the point of sideline reports, right? Like when they kick to the sideline reporter, you're like, okay, someone's hurt. They're asking coach a question. There was something to do with the deflated footballs pregame, like something happening that is noteworthy. That's why you're getting a sideline report. I didn't understand a word he said.
Right. Yeah, I'm still not 100% sure what the purpose of a sideline reporter is, especially these days. I think it's to just, you know, ask the coach. You get like one question: how'd you feel about the first half? And then, you know, the injury updates, etc. And it's not a fault on the sideline reporter themselves at all. It's just like the nature of the position. Like, yeah, that might be a story for a different time. But I think what Sergio was trying to do there, first of all, my first reaction was like, I just need more of this guy, because I thought he was funny, and he was unintentionally funny. You know, he was so fired up to give the report, but then I think he froze. And as a guy who works on television, I'm pretty sure, just kind of reading between the lines here, that he just froze up because he started ad-libbing things that hardly made sense, such as "look at him on your screen here." You know, I think what he was trying to do was just break down that coach's, you know, past resume and why he's worthy of the Denver job right now, et cetera. But the social media reaction to this was insane. And I kept watching the game, and the Chargers actually almost came back and tied that game at the end. I wanted a post game interview with Sergio Dipp and Vance Joseph, because the Broncos won on that blocked field goal at the last second. I was bummed we didn't get a post game interview with Dipp.
Or a halftime hit, right? Or anything else, any sort of other update throughout the game. I was deeply disappointed. So, I mean, he was already on for the intro, right? Like, we wanted to see more. America wanted to see more.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. My first question, when I kind of, like, stepped back and dissected this situation, was, how does that dude get that job? Like, okay, it's one thing if he just froze and he was terrible right there, but you can't tell me that they went through interviews and practice rounds and run-throughs and he was, like, spot-on dynamite, right? Like, that. There's no way that he was anywhere close to being capable of doing that job in any of, like, the preliminary stages leading up to that moment.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, because – you know, in previous years, thinking about what ESPN does with that second Monday night football game, because they usually do two Monday night games on the first week of the season. And it's you know, the second game is usually like Chris Berman and Trent Dilfer. And Berman, who is, you know, one of the all-time sports broadcasters, because his calling of highlights is incredible. But he's not a great play-by-play guy. He's not even really good. He's not super polished. And I think he would admit that. It's just kind of different and unique to listen to. And in past years, it's been somewhat tough to listen to. But in general, it's like, all right, it's Berman. This is, like, kind of funny. Let's just, like, you know, listen to it in a different way than you would get, like, a Sean McDonough or a Mike Tirico, who are just, you know, as polished as they come. But this, by the way, Beth Mowen's making her debut. Shout out to Beth. I like Beth. Think she's incredible with softball and other sports as well. Made her debut. This broadcast in general got ripped because Rex, you know, not great to say the least. Rex Ryan, Beth, it was all right. And then we had Sergio just put the icing on the cake. But I agree, it felt like one of those, like, somewhat funky thrown together broadcast crews. And here's the thing with that is you're getting to a larger point when you brought that up, which is, did ESPN fire so many of their on-air people? For example, Ed Werder could have worked that game. That was who they had to go to. Because I'm trying to think of who else they would have gone to.
Absolutely couldn't have been, right? You can't. Your last option can't be, no disrespect to Sergio, but your last option cannot be, in that situation, someone who can't even speak, like, fluent English in the moment, okay? Like, it was pretty broken. I don't think there's, yeah, like, any disputing that. It was broken English. It would sound like, if someone, you know, if I tried to go on ESPN Deportes and tried to give a report in Spanish, I'm pretty good, right, at Spanish, but in the moment I probably would have frozen up and it wouldn't have sounded anything like their native language. This isn't on him at all. This is on ESPN for putting him in this situation. And then the weird part is he goes on for that hit, right? It obviously doesn't sound good, and we don't see him the rest of the game. Did they just scrap it after that because they thought it was so bad?
Yeah.
And if that's the case,
I think they did.
How did you not know that was going to happen? How did you not know that that was going to happen in the first place? So I don't understand how that even slipped through the cracks.
He was tweeting during the game after that hit. I mean, like, minutes after that hit, his tweet from his verified account was, you know, he kept tweeting like, oh, I'm going to have to learn how to deal with fame now. Like, he called himself out. He took it really well. But yeah, it was bizarre. I think they must have scrapped it because there was no post game interview either, or even halftime interview, like you said.
It just doesn't make any
sense. I want more Dipp, dude. I want more
info on the situation for sure. And if you're even like partially right, which you, I'm not like discrediting your take on this at all, but if there's even like some validity to your take about ESPN making so many budget cuts that like that's kind of just what they had to roll with. Oh, yikes. Yikes. that's just not good at all.
All right. Final question before we move on. If you knew that Sergio Dipp was going to be sideline reporting for like the Monday night game next Monday, would you watch it? Not solely for, but would you be more encouraged to watch it if you knew Sergio Dipp was the sideline reporter?
Yeah, I was more encouraged to watch the rest of that sorry game because I just the little sliver of hope that he would reappear on my television. If you're trying to get to maybe it was just a marketing ploy by ESPN, I guess it worked, but I don't know, man.
That's not what I was trying to get to, but I think it's how it turned out accidentally, you know? Like people in 2017
I know what you mean.
love when things are like it's so bad it's good, you know? That's a very 2017 like feeling on things.
I know exactly what you're saying. I'm not saying that that was your take. I'm just saying like if that I mean, I guess that could be a possibility. That would be a crazy setup by ESPN. I don't even know anymore. The sports media industry in 2017 is just so whack. Anything is possible.
That's true.
Nick Wright has his own show. I don't know what to think anymore.
let's get to college football. AP is the sport I love, sport you love. We had some great games this weekend. Going to be some more good games this weekend ahead of us. But SC and Stanford, that was a result that I admittedly was not expecting. SC just crushed Stanford in the second half. 42-24 was the final there. Auburn Clemson was a good game. 14-6 Clemson, really low scoring. Oklahoma Ohio State, that was nationally the biggest game of the weekend. Two top five teams. And I had mentioned I've been on the bench JT Barrett train for years. Anyone who follows me knows that, but it continues to show up in big games. Last year in Clemson, against Clemson in the playoff, they were literally shut out. This weekend against Oklahoma, they couldn't move the ball. And listen, I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he is. I don't think Urban Meyer would lie about that. There's a reason that he is their quarterback. But the best thing that ever happened to that Ohio State team that won the Natty a couple of years ago was JT Barrett's injury, because Cardale Jones was a massive upgrade. And then they just said, all right, well, we have an inexperienced QB. Let's hand it off to Zeke Elliott 100 times. So there are a lot of different ways we can go about this Oklahoma-Ohio State game. And I don't want to just rip Ohio State. I think Oklahoma deserves a lot of credit. And Baker Mayfield is probably the front runner for the Heisman right now.
I agree with that last take. I'd say he definitely leads the Heisman campaign. I don't understand why JT Barrett is so bad. I'm with you. He's bad. He stinks. He can't throw the ball. He's so inaccurate with the football. He cannot throw the football at all. Yet the dude is. It seems like JT Barrett's been there for what, 8 years now. He's like the Perry Ellis of college football. The dude just continues to keep coming back to Ohio State and getting the starting job, but he's not that good. So Ohio State isn't out of it technically, but that loss definitely hurts them. And going forward, are they going to bench JT Barrett? Because I mean, you can't go like 50% on your completions and miss like wide open throws and not move the ball on offense. So I don't know what they're going to do there. It was a big weekend in college football. That game was crazy. The Stanford SC game, like you mentioned, though, that's usually the game that SC loses. They usually lose that game to Stanford, and they showed up and they just roundhouse Stanford. Sam Darnold's the real deal. That guy's amazing. Future first round pick, future millionaire for sure. A lot of good stuff in college football right now. A lot of great players. Year of the quarterback. Year of the quarterback. Do we agree with that? Last year was kind of the year of the running back. A lot of good quarterbacks showing up this year.
I'll go year of the quarterback. That was definitely a preseason storyline, and I'm fine with that, with Lamar returning and Sam Darnold returning.
Did you see what Lamar Jackson did last week?
Huh. Yeah.
That dude is in midseason form.
He is insane. How they lost the way they did down the stretch last year, is head scratching. And sometimes he's a little bit head scratching too. He is so freaking good. And he was great against, I'm tired of people saying he's bad against good teams, because he's not. He was great against Clemson, the team that won the Natty last year. And he was great against Florida State, a team that had won the Natty a couple years ago and has a bunch of NFL talent. It's not his fault that they lost to Kentucky. They put up points in that game, although he didn't look great. He did not look good at all against Houston at the end of last season. And of course, that LSU game was a disaster. But the SEC's got a lot on Lamar. If Lamar played in the SEC, I don't know what he'd be doing, but he doesn't. He plays in the ACC, which is great. And he's exciting. He is like a Mike Vick. He's basically a Mike Vick. He can go 0 to 100 in about 2 seconds. I mean, he makes one cut and he can make Division I linebackers look just silly. So he's awesome. Let's talk SC Stanford for a second, and then I want to get your thoughts on Baker Mayfield destroying Ohio State. Like you mentioned, I think we were both kind of surprised. So Stanford had won 6 of the last 8, I believe, and 3 in a row. And I was expecting, especially given the way Stanford's opener played out, like I know it was against Rice, but they won but like 62-7 or something. I was expecting Stanford to be able to run the ball and kind of keep it away from Darnold. And I think everyone was expecting that. Stanford was favored by 6 or so on the road, and they didn't. Darnold was really, really good. And these USC receivers made some unbelievable catches in that game. And statistically speaking, that was the worst defensive performance in the history of Stanford football under David Shaw. They gave up over 600 yards. It's the most they've ever given up. So maybe Stanford's D isn't that good, but USC's skill players are as good as there is in college football. And final point here, I think Stanford might have been a little rusty because they hadn't played since August 26th in Australia. And it's not an excuse at all. Like, USC was just straight up the better team. But I think they might have been a little rusty given that they hadn't played in a couple weeks, and it had, their only game before that was, you know, a 13-hour plane flight away.
Every time this happens every year, every time the SC wins a few games, they get a high ranking, you want to buy in. You really do want to buy into the SCLA hype, and then they go and they lose to someone. And yeah, I mean, they're not, then they don't make the national championship. So I want to buy into USC right now. I think that with Sam Darnold, that's like the one thing that they've lacked with all this talent that they've had over the years, you know, basically since their national championship run, is an elite quarterback that can really save them in tough spots where other playmakers cannot step up. Like, Sam Darnold is that dude. Make no mistake. I still don't think Clay Helton's that good of a coach. But I think Darnold is good enough to carry the rest of the team, if that makes sense. So the Stanford win didn't surprise me that much. I could have easily seen it being a letdown, a typical letdown SC game against Stanford. But Sam Darnold, just, he does what he does. The guy's a stud. He's going to show up. He's going to be a future millionaire. He's going to make every single throw. The guy literally makes NFL throws every single game, like at least 10 of them. So from that standpoint, that didn't surprise me at all. I think that where he's at right now, he's good enough to take USC all the way when other players and when, you know, play calling and Coach Helton and whatever, every other factor considered, is not to the level of a championship team. I think that he can still overcome all that.
I think so, too. I think there are going to be a couple games this year where they give up 40-something to another team. Their defense is still a little bit of a question mark to me, and Helton's a question mark. I think he's a mature guy, Clay Helton, which is basically what SC needed. They needed a grown-ass man to take over that program after Drunk Sark and Lane Kiffin were in charge with the maturity of about an 18-year-old at best while they were there. So they have a mature head coach, you know, X's and O's wise, like whatever. It's good. It's easy to look good when you have Darnold, but I'm sure he's a solid head coach. That's just my question mark with SC, is their defense, and then Helton against, you know, another elite head coach. But hey, David Shaw is about as good as it gets in college football coaching wise. All righty. Boise State, Washington State. That game was so weird. It was the amazing backup quarterback bowl. God bless Washington State, especially Washington State playing after 7 o'clock at night. It is just so much fun. You really never know what is going to happen when Washington State steps onto a football field. I'm not kidding. Like they could lose to Idaho and they could beat USC. I mean, you literally have no idea what's going to happen when Washington State's on a football field, which is incredible entertainment. They scored 21 fourth quarter points and won in, I believe it was triple overtime, 47-44 against Boise State. And Luke Falk was benched for not playing well, although I thought a lot of that was on their O-line, which is heralded as being one of the best O-lines in the country, which I think is a little bit BS. That
was he benched or was he hurt?
What?
Was Luke Falk benched or was he hurt?
He was first benched, came back in, and then got concussed.
Oh, my God. That's like that dude's 10th concussion or something like that. The dude has had a ton of head problems, so I hope he's all right.
Oh, yeah, totally same. And then Boise State's Brett Rypien, I don't know, I'm not 100% sure what his injury was, but he was out for the game at some point. And so their backup quarterback came in and threw a disastrous, like, shovel pass interception. And anyways, like, as far as entertainment value, I was looking up because, by the way, that game, here's what I haven't even mentioned yet. That game, I think, was 31-10, Boise State, late. And I was thinking, like, all right, man, here we go. Washington State's actually not that good, you know? Like, they were ranked, they were 1-0, but, man, they're actually not that good. Up quarterback, they come all the way back and win it in triple overtime.
That game was nuts, right? Absolutely nuts. Isn't Washington State, the epitome of Pac-12 after dark?
Dude, they are. Well, I mean, I'm serious. That's like off the top. That's what I meant. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen when Washington State's on the field.
They could lose to Portland State or they could beat Alabama. What was up with that pick six that Boise State quarterback threw? That was one of the sorriest throws I've ever seen in my life. That was a Beaver Nation throw right there to let Washington State back in it.
Yeah, that like shovel pass throw. What
the hell was that?
I don't know.
A sorry effort.
Yeah. Okay. Yo, let's get to this Baker destroying OSU with the flag. So, first of all, I had no problem with it. When another team is coming at your head for an entire game, you deserve to do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt someone else or like violate property in celebration. And Baker's celebration was 100% clean. And man, Kirk Herbstreit, like, I love you, dog. I really do. I think you're the best in the biz. And I'm not just saying that. I think Kirk Herbstreit is literally the best in the world at what he does. But for him to kind of go off on Baker like that, I don't know if you saw that on Saturday night, calling it a disrespectful move, etc. That's just a homer take there, man. That's just a total Buckeye homer take. Dude, if you win a football game, you can celebrate by running around with a flag and stabbing it into the ground. It's not like he spray painted the stadium or hurt anyone. He was just having fun and he deserved it, man.
Yeah. Sometimes Herbie gets a little bit butthurt about certain things. Like, do you remember a few years ago when Leonard Fournette scored his first touchdown and he put up the Heisman arm and Herbie just had a meltdown about how he's like a freshman and you should have acted like he'd been there? Dude, just chill for a second. It's not that big of a deal. Yeah, the guy got seriously butthurt about Baker Mayfield just stuffing Ohio State into a locker and then embarrassing their entire program and the entire state of Ohio by planting that flag in the middle of the field. I'm all about that, man. He deserved that. And Ohio State was clowning him last year when they beat Oklahoma at Oklahoma. So he deserved a little bit of revenge. What's wrong with him doing that?
Yeah, especially when, oh, by the way, he just torched your team on the field. The final score was 31-16, but that game was not close in the second half. Like, it was not close. Ohio State, if you watched it and you like felt the flow and the energy of the game, they never had a shot to win in the second half. And yeah, man, Baker deserves it. And he's a fun dude. I'm rooting for him. And he did come out and apologize after that game. I bet some like Oklahoma SID or like coach or something was like, hey, that shot was on national TV. Like, you should apologize. And he did. I wouldn't have if I was in his situation, because I'm not sure what you would need to apologize for there. But dude, he deserved it, and I like Baker. Baker's kind of like the Johnny Football but not as big of a partier of 2017. What do you think about that take?
I like it. He's still an animal. Didn't he get in trouble in the offseason for something that you would probably see Manziel getting in trouble for? I'll just leave it at that. I won't go into specifics, but I could easily see Baker Mayfield waking up on a Saturday morning, hungover, chugging a Gatorade, and going slinging the pigskin around.
Oh, he's awesome, man. Two-time walk-on, too. You got to love that. All right.
Manziel diet, you wake up, just chug a Gatorade and call it good.
Chug some Ace of Spades and call it good. AP, it's time for the Beaver Breakdown. This is a segment that, for anyone listening, we are wide open to sponsorships. I think we might get this thing sponsored soon enough. But, my man, it happened again. The Beavers lost 48-14 to a team that completed 7 forward passes and is probably not going to be much of a factor in their conference this year. The Minnesota Golden Gophers swaggered into Reser Stadium, a 2.5-point underdog in Vegas, mind you. That was just a Christmas gift by Vegas to anyone who follows Oregon State, and they took the L.
Before I dive deep into the Beaver rant, let me ask you a question. Let me ask, for anyone else out there listening, we know you're listening to the Beaver rant. We know you love it. This is for the fans right here. What the hell is wrong with Vegas when it comes to the Beavers? Is Vegas the only entity that does not understand how sorry Oregon State is? Do they not listen to our show? Do they not watch Oregon State football? Every week, Vegas gets the Beaver line wrong. Colorado State only by 4. They thought the Beavers were going to beat Portland State by like 30 points. Are you kidding me? And then the nerve, the absolute nerve to say that the Beavers were favored over Minnesota. If you're asking me, it looks like Vegas is just trying to give away some free money.
I know. This is one of those, like,
they're the only entity that does not get the Beavers.
That line, I was like, someone knows something that we don't know, or someone's got like a ton of money. This game's fixed or something, but then it played out the way it did. Where do you want to start here? There's a lot that we could do here. Where do you want to start with the Beaver rant?
Why don't we start with the fact that they got roundhoused again by Minnesota, not by Alabama, not by USC, not by, you know, a legitimate Division I football team. They got roundhoused by Minnesota at home. Fans left. The quarterback stinks. The coach stinks. Gary Anderson is a huge fraud. Huge fraud. This is year 3 for Gary Anderson with an E. Anderson. And they're still losing games badly. What happened to the vision? What happened to the identity? There's no identity. Don't tell me that the Beavers are losing their identity. Don't write that Homer column about the Beavers getting away from their identity. There is no identity. The identity for the Beavers is they show up and they get waxed. And they win one BS game each year, and then they carry Anderson off the field and they grease it up all over social media. That's the Beaver way. The Beaver way is to lose to every team that you're supposed to, except the one team each year. And then Beaver fans will hang their hat on that one game. And you know what the rest of the time Beaver fans are doing? And Beaver players probably as well. They're watching Duck games. They're rooting for the Ducks to lose more than they're wanting the Beavers to win. That's the Beaver way right there.
That's 100% fact. I've witnessed that firsthand.
That's all I really have to say right now. That's a total lie. I got way more to say on this Beaver rant. That's where I'm gonna start.
No, it's a good start. You laid the foundation. So just to explain what happened in the game really fast for anyone who missed it. It was 17-0 Minnesota right out of the gate. And then the rain came down. It was whipping and the weather got bad and the Beavers managed to score 2 straight touchdowns. So it was 17-14 and people are thinking like, man, this, you know, the weather's turning, Beavers are turning up. And then no, the second half came and Minnesota turned it on. 5 rushing touchdowns, 253. Quarterback system that just didn't work. Their starter completed 7. As a team, they completed 7 passes for the game. and their offense was still borderline unstoppable in the second half. I'm serious, man. Like, you should never feel bad for, you know, for ripping a coach who makes $2.5 million a year. This is fact. I looked up his contract. The Oregon Live wrote an article about it. He makes $2.5 million a year. By 2021, which is when his contract's going to be up, he's going to be making almost $3 million a year. A year.
Are you serious,
and,
Clark?
And by the way, that's his base salary. That's not like with bonuses for like making a bowl.
Let's be damn clear about something. You don't have to worry about those bonuses, brother. There ain't no bowl bonus for the Beavers.
Yeah. Ain't nothing skippy down there in San Antonio.
Let me tell you something right now, brother. There ain't no bonuses for Gary Anderson. That's it. When they say base salary, that means that's Gary Anderson's salary. There's no Civil War bonus, even though they lucked out and got a cheap win last year. There's no bowl game bonus. There's no above 600 or 500 bowl bonus. The only bonus that Gary Anderson is getting is he's probably going to be fired. He'll be on an island somewhere next year in Hawaii collecting unemployment checks.
I don't think they can fire him, dude. Get this. Scott Barnes, the AD, gave him a one-year extension after winning the Civil War last year. They extended him through 2021.
Oh, my God. That's such a Beaver move.
They won four games last year. They won four games, and he got an extension.
Helfrich got fired last year after taking a team to the national championship 2 years before that, and he got fired. And Anderson's getting a contract extension because they won four games.
That's incredible. I don't know why Helf got an extension after the Natty either. That was an interesting move because it's like he had mentioned time and time and time again that Oregon was his dream school. It's like, dude, he wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't jumping somewhere else. You know, I think that was more of just like a
thank you.
like a quick $15 million thank you for winning the Rose Bowl. Yeah, maybe so.
Let's be real. Gary Anderson is the best agent in college football. He is the best agent.
Yeah. Yeah,
what is this dude saying in these meetings with Oregon State boosters and the AD and everyone else that's working the operations there? What film is he showing them? What statistics is he breaking down for them when he's arguing for a higher salary for his client? Gary Anderson is a fraud, a huge fraud. The Beavers are not good. They were never good under Gary Anderson. They're not going to be good. Mike Riley was like 10 times the coach that Gary Anderson
is. Oh, brother. Yeah, it ain't close. Mike Riley's 10 times the coach. He's 20 times the coach. It's just that football, it's that supposed football guy, military sergeant, like personality. Yeah.
Guess what, brother? That doesn't win you games. What wins you games is if you're a good coach and you have good strategy and you get good players. Gary Anderson is just recruiting like two-star guys from a town that you've never heard of and just hoping that they'll plug and play in his system. What system, by the way, does he have? What system is there?
No, that's a real question is if we want to talk football, like what is their offensive identity? And someone asked him that this week and he said, I mean, at least he admitted he didn't know because they were apparently trying to run like an air raid passing attack with like a smash mouth running attack this year.
Okay,
which
that doesn't
work. I've never seen that.
You can't have both of those and call it an odd. That's just like mixing two different things and just like calling it good. Like that's just a plate of leftovers and calling it dinner.
Okay, so let's play. That's worse. All right, I got five of them for you. You ready?
You got five good ones. Go ahead, hit me.
Yeah. All right. What is worse? The Beavers football team or, and then I got five ones.
Okay.
Beavers football team or nuked mozzarella sticks.
Oh, that is absolutely disgusting, man. I've actually had those before, dude. I think I'm going to have to go with nuked mozzarella sticks. I've actually had those before, and they are heinous.
Yeah, they're sorry.
They're absolutely vile.
Yo, dude, I think Applebee's just has a bunch of microwaves in their kitchen, dude. It's not they don't even have like stovetops or ovens. It's just a bunch of microwaves.
When you go back there,
just nuking food back there.
Their chefs are just like, their chefs are just like regular Joes putting shit in the microwave and zap.
Just nuking chicken wings and chips, man. And whatever else. That teriyaki bowl that they have is for sure just nuked for like 3 minutes.
They leave it under a heat lamp for like 5 minutes, so it makes it seem like more time has elapsed.
Just a nuked steak, dude.
Applebee's, that is an absolute fraud. That's a Gary Anderson restaurant right there, dude. It's a fraud restaurant. Gary Anderson, man, that guy is a fraud, dude. You know what I need to do is I need to go up there for one of those media availability, a fake Oregon press mask, and just start grilling this dude with some questions. I want to know what this guy's like entire scheme is, dude, if he even has one.
Right.
This is year three, man. You cannot be getting outgained by 200 yards to Portland State. And Portland State didn't even have their main quarterback in for half the game.
Portland State's main quarterback can't even throw either, dude. They just work like a weird, like,
Portland State's main quarterback isn't even a main quarterback.
And they're
okay. All right. I got one for you, P. I got one. You ready?
All right.
What's worse? What's worse, Beaver football or fraternity liquor?
We're talking about
that cheap vodka. That cheap vodka, right? That you see at a fraternity function.
That's Svedka.
And you just Svedka. Know the Fleischmann's, the Popoff, the Burnett's. You know that if you drink that, the next day you are not getting out of bed until afternoon.
Yeah. And it's like drinking shards of glass too, dude. You're literally burning your esophagus
in the process.
Right.
You better hope that you have like a liter of soda with you to get by like a couple of shots of that,
and just play it off.
Yeah, just call it good. Are we saying Beaver football in this one? I still think Beaver football sawyer than fraternity alcohol, because I can tolerate fraternity alcohol. I can't watch.
I'm gonna say Beaver football is worse because fraternity basement alcohol, at least you like kind of know what you're getting into, and it also gets the job done. Like, let's be honest, the point of fraternity basement alcohol is not to taste good. It's to get you to loosen up out there on the dance floor, so to say. You're going into it knowing you're not drinking, you know, some nice cocktail at a lounge in some downtown big city. So I'm going Beaver football on this one.
Yeah, you never know what you're getting with the Beaver football. They don't have an identity. Forget losing their identity, dude. I'm telling you, Beaver football does not have an identity.
All right, AP, let's move on to the Jemele Hill conversation at the moment, calling out Trump on Twitter. I'll let you start this one because you brought up this topic to the podcast.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Without getting too political on this, because it's 2017 and everyone is so very triggered by anything that anyone says. You know, there's no safe spaces anymore. No safe spaces. So without getting too political, I think it's a bold strategy for sure, Cotton, just kind of firing that off at the president. ESPN slapping her on the wrist and not giving her a suspension. I thought that was kind of weird, just kind of given the history of ESPN suspending on-air personalities for making political statements about how they don't like Obama or how they don't like the, you know, transgender bathroom laws. She goes out and just flat out says Trump's a white supremacist and doesn't get a suspension. So I just found that a little bit interesting. It's one of those things where people will always say stick to sports, or they'll be on the other side of the spectrum and they'll say good for her for speaking up. She's using her First Amendment. I just think this is one of those situations where it's probably just smarter to not embrace these kind of things on not just social media, but, you know, if your job is you're working at ESPN, maybe don't bring it up in a show. Just kind of focus on, you know, what the parameters of the show are and just kind of like entertaining the audience with, you know, good journalism. But that just might be me. I find it would probably be smarter to err on the side of caution on this one if I were Jemele Hill or anyone else that works in the industry for that matter.
Right. Yeah. Here we go. Politics just suck, man. Like
they do.
I don't understand. I don't understand people who enjoy talking about politics for a living, because there seems to be a ton of them. People love studying law and politics, and I don't get it. I will never be able to understand that perspective, or at least for now, I don't of why people legitimately enjoy politics. Again, I don't want to get too political here, but the you know, when it comes up, when there are different discussions of race, religion, etc., I think those are important. And I think, you know, here's the thing. People always say, you know, sports are a safe haven for everyone. And I think that's why it can be really tough if you are a Jemele Hill or Michael Smith. You know, I'm talking about SC The Six now, their show, that they basically embrace just the whole Kaepernick story, the Michael Bennett story, etc. That's a lot, not all of, because they certainly give some researched sports takes. I'll give them plenty of credit for that, but also a lot of that show appears to me to be about that stuff outside of sports, so religion and you know, race and whatever else whatever other political argument you want to make or bring to the table. And here's the thing, like, I think in our world, there's totally a place for that. And I think people always say, well, sports can be such a great medium to kind of, you know, discuss all of these topics. I think that's partially true. I think athletes can certainly make a statement by whatever they want to do. Kaepernick sure as heck, you know, won, if you want to say that. You know, anything that LeBron James or Kevin Durant would do right now, if they were to make some kind of a statement, if the Warriors aren't going to the White House and people want to talk about that, you know, that's totally cool. But when I'm looking to just watch a TV show about sports, that's exactly what I'm looking to do. I don't want to hear one way or the other. Like, even if it's something I agree with, take whatever political argument you want to have. Let's just say there's one, I'll give you a very basic one about marijuana. Should marijuana be legalized? Like, I don't, like, even though I'm totally pro legalization of marijuana, I don't want to hear about someone else talking about pro legalization of marijuana a sports show. I just want to hear different topics about sports, not different topics about politics. And I think that's, you know, that's the broad takeaway here. And also, so that's one. Number two, I think that as someone who does work in television and on television, it is literally in my contract that I'm not supposed to talk about politics on the air. And I think that that's a tricky, slippery slope, but I think you have to understand that and respect that as someone who signs a contract and gets paid to do what they do. You're more than welcome to have private discussions and I guess public discussions, just not on their airwaves. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm certainly not opposed to her speaking her opinion. But I also, as someone who works, albeit not at a network, but on live television, I understand that and agree that she should be, you know, I guess, quote unquote, slapped on the wrist if it's in her contract to not say that. So those are a couple points there. And I have a lot more to say, but I'll leave it there for now.
I think those are great points. In summary, I'm going to just kind of say one more closing thought. If you really want the answer to all of this, the key to finding, you know, a nice common ground when you're talking about politics, I'll give you the answer right here. It's just to not talk about politics at all in general. Just avoid the conversations. I think, seriously, you'll be a much happier person if you just do not indulge in some of these political conversations because they never end well. They do not end well. Usually the harsh words are exchanged and someone else is going to disagree with what you say. And I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time in whatever rhetoric that you want to engage in. But politics get nasty. And just my experience with it all, be informed, you know, be intelligent, be informed, do your research, have your facts. That's great. But to just, you know, to engage in kind of a nasty conversation, which is like 99.9% of the conversations with politics, that's kind of the direction they go. It's just not necessary. Be a good person. Go be nice to people. Make an impact that way. Don't go up to someone and immediately start blasting Obama or start blasting Trump. It's just you'll be a lot happier if you don't go out of your way to make someone feel uncomfortable about their political opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of hate in the world around politics and social media.
It really is.
Social media only amplifies that. I think it would probably help a little bit if Trump wasn't in office as far as the whole hate train. I'm not saying like one way or the other, you know, in that sense, but I think he is the type of polarizing guy who stirs up hate.
I would say that the man has definitely exacerbated the problem.
So that would probably help. But anyways, we don't have to go too far down that road. I think, you know, with regards to the six, first of all, there was a really, really well-written article on The Ringer by Brian Curtis, which made me respect Jemele Hill a lot and just like kind of her upbringing. And it was an extremely tough upbringing for her and like for her getting to where she is today. Shout out to Jemele because she did a great job, you know, kind of overcoming a lot. But the six in general and where that show is headed and where ESPN is headed, I think it is a really interesting discussion that I guess we could bring up here because I guess the way to put where TV and media is headed to in sports media is, you know, at its basic level, we're trading a highlight for a hot take segment is what a lot of people say.
Steaming hot take.
The six. I'm just not really sure what its identity is yet, and I'm not sure to rip it
the
at all.
The six is Beaver football.
I just don't, and it's a tough time slot, man. It is, but like I just don't really know, you know what the identity of it is, and I don't bring this up to rip it at all. I'm just trying to, you know, we're just having a discussion about what, you know, where sports media is headed, and clearly ESPN is. Tried to, you know, market this show 100 times over, and it's blown up in terms of its in terms of the marketing for it. Headed, and I don't discourage. I know Kobe calls Jemele Hill the sports Oprah, and I think that's what she's probably trying to do, or maybe something along those lines.
What does that even mean, the sports Oprah? Come on, Kobe.
I don't know, man.
Come on, bud.
I don't want to discourage it, but I just I don't think that I think it's important. Something you said a couple minutes ago, like just don't engage in politics. And I agree
control
with that for the most part.
Just don't engage.
Yeah, control you can control. I think when people are tuning in for a sports show, they want to hear unique takes about sports, not sports takes about politics, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. I mean, if we're offering our kind of assessment on the six in general, I don't like the show. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's insightful. I don't think either of them are funny when they try to be funny, and I don't think their takes are good. That doesn't mean that Michael and Jemele aren't intelligent and that they don't work hard, and that they aren't professional, any of that stuff. And I don't dislike them because of their political views either. I just don't think the show is good. It is a tough time slot. That's a good point that you brought up. It's the middle of the day time slot where it's a little tough to recap what happened the day before, and it's too early to talk about the games that are going to happen at night. So you can't really run any highlights. So I guess what do? You kind of resort to the hot take model, right? But
I don't know why you have to do that, though, dude.
I agree. There are many alternatives, and I wish that the industry in general would just kind of stay away from that model. But unfortunately, it's catching and spreading like wildfire. I don't think that show's good, by the way, though, just to throw that out there.
This is what we're doing. We're going to we illuminate and make fun of the hot take shows, right?
We need to start watching first.
We expose the frauds. We need to start watching first takes first, or first things first. I think that's what it's called.
I can't start my morning that early with something that terrible.
All right, here we go. CJ McCollum, my dude, threw out a tweet the other day, and he said, we need to start ranking these weak-ass journalists with descriptions of their strengths, weaknesses, and ability to make up quote sources. Got 17K retweets and 45K likes. David Aldridge, the really good TNT sideline reporter, said, do you or anyone who actually plays in the AL care about a meaningless ranking by journalists you don't know, respect? And then Andre Iguodala chimed in, but it would be fun to rank y'all. And then David West, just the thirstiest player on the planet for a ring, just hobbling around in a wheelchair, somehow getting a ring, says, can't take the heat, 2.2K favorites. Anyways, so AP, should we do some rankings of our own? And by the way, this stemmed from, I believe, Carmelo getting ranked 64th on ESPN's top 100 NBA rank and Lonzo Ball getting 63rd, in addition to some other interesting players who are ranked higher than Melo.
Pretty funny that all these years I thought that Melo was overrated, and now finally he's gotten to the point where he's actually severely underrated. But that, I mean, that's a different topic that we can save for a different day once the season kind of once the NBA season starts and gets deeper into that. But yeah, we can rank journalists right now. There are a lot of terrible journalists out there that have very high paying lucrative jobs and that are on primetime and they have their own platform. It's a damn shame. The industry is in a funky place right now, and it's sad to see a lot of these people rise to prominence. You want me to just hit you with a list of who I think the worst 10 journalists are?
Yeah. Hit me. Well, I guess. I don't know if you want to.
I mean, yeah, it would be funny, right? It, just like CJ and Andre said, I think it would be funny to rank some of these people.
All right, let's do it.
In no particular order, I came up with a list today. Skip is for sure. For sure, at the top of this list, he's probably.
And we should probably
one.
Clarify this as like just sports media people, right? Like not necessarily like a journalist.
Yeah, it's tough to even call these people journalists for some of the things that they do. But yeah, just the industry in general. Skip's got to be at the top. Screamin' A is not far behind. I mean, I guess you could say that Screamin' A has like a little bit more legitimacy because maybe he has like some validity to his takes and isn't just like. isn't just out there to get clicks, but Stephen A is definitely up there. Nick Wright's a huge fraud. I cannot believe that dude has his own show. Chris Broussard is another huge fraud. FS1 is just loaded with frauds. Chris Broussard, if you remember before he went to Fox, he still does it now, but he was notorious at ESPN for just making up sources out of thin air and breaking news that just did not exist. That dude's a huge fraud, definitely in this list. Jason Whitlock from FS1, speak for yourself. That dude's a huge fraud. He's definitely in the worst 10. I don't get like 99% of the things that dude says on his show. It makes no sense at all. Like I said earlier, I don't think Michael and Jamel are any good. A lot of people might disagree with that, but I don't think their show's good at all. Mike and Mike are pretty sorry now. That's just dinosaur radio, brother.
Dude, Mike and Mike, I don't know. that is some meatloaf radio.
Meatball hoagie radio.
It's kind of like funny. The jokes are so bad they're funny. It's like the dad joke, you know? It's like your neighbor's dad that always makes the corny jokes.
Oh man.
It's tough to listen to sometimes though.
It's pretty damn bad. You can throw in like half of the writers from Bill Simmons' website, The Ringer. I don't think that website's that good at all. They got a few good articles. Like the Jamel one was good today. They have a couple of decent writers. A lot of those articles are horseshit, dude. They are just flaming hot dog crap. So you can toss in like half the people that write for that website. What else? Oh, dude, that guy Matt Miller. The guy that does the QB scouting and
oh yeah, the NFL draft
for Bleacher Report, dude. That guy is the worst. That guy is the absolute worst, dude. The guy that's on those videos and does those like weird selfie videos breaking down NFL quarterbacks. That dude is not good at all.
What about Christine Leahy?
Christine Leahy's for sure on the list. but maybe I should take her off because I don't want her to think that I'm threatening her.
Stay in your lane.
Yo, shout out to LeVar, man. That guy is just the GOAT, dude.
Yeah.
I freaking love that guy. There's a video today of him giving like his handyman like a new truck. That guy is just so awesome, dude. If y'all watch that Ball in the Family stuff, that reality show on Facebook, man, like LeVar is so awesome, dude. He is such a good dude. Like he has a really bad rap because Stephen A screams at him, but in general, he is an awesome dude.
Yeah, that's just a short list of journalists that I wanted to throw on that in that topic. You got a few that I didn't mention?
Let's see. I forgot what Jason Whitlock's name is, but now that you mentioned it, definitely Whitlock's at the he honestly might be number one for me. Actually, well, Skip is always going to be number one.
Snacklock?
Because Skip's the OG of just like the worst people in sports media, but. Yeah, I think Whitlock's number two. That I just remember after Kobe's he brought back up like the Kobe rape Colorado thing again.
Yeah, and it was so unnecessary.
Like, dude, you are like how bad of a person do you have to be to do that?
That's a total awful human move.
Let's see. No, I think you covered them all, dude. I really do.
It's a solid list, huh?
That's a really solid list.
Broussard is a sneaky one on there, dude. You got to see a lot of people don't remember that Broussard used to make up sources.
I kind of like Broussard, dude.
He makes up sources. There are no exclusive sources from. Just Google. Google Chris Broussard sources. There have been like multiple instances of this dude just creating false reports trying to break.
That's not good.
No, not at all. I can't respect that.
He's just breaks on FS1.
Yeah, and he's just another one of those people that came from ESPN over to Fake Sports One.
Always wrong, ESPN. Chris Broussard wrong yet again. That's the first article that comes up.
Yeah, I told you.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
He just makes up sources?
Yeah, dude.
Incredible.
That's what happens.
NBA sources confirm.
Oh. Hey, you wanna toss out some good capital? I told you, Broussard is a fraud.
Apparently, the Tristan Thompson deal was complete inaccurate that he reported. That's crazy.
Oh yeah.
All right. Final thing, AP. Ending rants and closing thoughts. You got a rant on DraftKings.
Man, I got a big one on DraftKings. I cannot stand this company. You remember a few years ago when DraftKings was first kind of blowing up and then them and FanDuel launched their incessant marketing plan during the football season where every single commercial break you would see at least one of those commercials, if not two or three of them, and it would drive you nuts. Do you remember this like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. After like a couple of multi-million dollar lawsuits, they kind of went quiet for a little bit, and I thought that was the end of them, and I've never been happier. And this season, they just shot right back up again. They're all over Barstool. Barstool is greasing them up. They're probably getting a ton of money from DraftKings. They're back on national TV. They're back during football commercial breaks. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram. It's awful, man. I can't escape these guys. I don't want to play that daily fantasy crap. $1 billion. That's not real news. That's fake news, dude. You're not going to win $1 billion playing fantasy football online. You're not going to win anything. There is a reason that companies like that make so much money. It is gambling. It is not a game of skill. You sign up, you deposit some money in there, and then you will never see it again because some guy sits on his computer all day and he creates an algorithm where he knows what best players are going to work on each given Sunday. And that lineup's going to beat your lineup and you're going to lose money. Nothing is ever as easy as it seems in this world. You do not just sign up for a stupid fantasy football contest and win $1 billion. That's not how any of this works.
Yeah, I can't believe people bought into that one, that the $1 billion contest. I actually literally read the rules and descriptions for that. And you have to have, you know how impossible that was? There was no way someone was going to win because you had a salary cap and players were all worth, you know, a fake amount of money. So you had to go under the salary cap, but choose the best player at every single position and multiple best players, like the best lineup. So a quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, tight end, flex, defense, kicker. You had to end up with the best performance of the week at every single one of those multiple positions, and you had to keep it under the salary cap. So like you had to have like three or four players who were just not good. You had to have like a, I don't know, fill in the like Sterling Shepard at wide receiver or something bizarre like that.
Yeah, it's a scam, dude. These companies are scams. They're frauds. It's a Ponzi scheme. You deposit. You would honestly have a better time taking $20, ripping it in half, and throwing it in the Pacific Ocean and probably getting a better ROI than you would donating money to DraftKings.
How are they back? Do you know?
Dude, companies like that just don't go away. They got a bunch of slippery CEOs that probably paid off some crooked lawyers. I don't know, man. But I despise daily fantasy companies like FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. This was a fun pod. The Beaver Breakdown, brilliant as always. College football and the NFL, real solid stuff. The Beaver football game was real good. And yeah, man, this was a fun one. Football season's here, so our next couple pods are going to be real interesting.
I like it, man. Beaver Breakdown every week, folks.
Final thing. The Beavers are 21-point underdogs against Washington State. Who you got in that one?
I would assume that's in Pullman.
Yeah.
That's in Pullman. Oh, Pullman is going to be liquored up. Yeah, I'm taking the Cougs for sure. In fact, I might even take that on a teaser and put like Cougs minus 28 or something just to get a better return. They're going to house call the Beavers by at least 40.
I think that's good. Dude, the Beavers' entire secondary is not going to play in that game. They're starting secondary. They're either hurt or suspended. Yeah, they're all hurt or suspended.
I'm looking at the schedule right now. I don't see the Beavers winning another game. And they should be 0-3. That's what pisses me off. They should have lost to Portland State. But realistically, now that they actually have a win, and I'm looking at the rest of the season.
They have literally a 0% chance of winning their next five games. They're not going to beat anyone in their next five games. And then,
Forget the next five. I'm talking about the season in general. I don't see them winning another game, period.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I don't think they will. But the Arizona schools are pretty bad. And by the end of the season, maybe. I don't know. If this team can get an identity, maybe.
Gary Anderson's got to be gone. He has to be gone.
They don't have enough money to buy him out, I don't think.
So you're just going to sit with some fake dude making money, winning like two games a year?
I don't think they have enough money, dude, because they would have to... He's through 2021 making $2.5 million a year. So they would have to basically pay him close to $10 million to just peace out and then sign another coach for that much money.
I don't know what I'm doing going back to school, man. Grad school is not the way to go. I literally should just try to be a coach, dude. If I were a college coach and I could get fired for doing a sorry job, I'd be set for life.
Yeah. All you got to do is get there, dude. Just get to the top and you're set for life. It's like Helfrich, dude. That guy's literally just set for life.
The set for life degree.
Yeah. It's a different one, but yeah, that's good stuff. All right, AP. Enjoy the week, brother, down there in Tulane. And everybody, thanks for listening. Subscribe on SoundCloud. Subscribe on iTunes. We are on Twitter, at Tony in the Field. We'll put up some polls this week. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening. Got great feedback last week, and keep the feedback coming. We appreciate you guys. And until then, we'll see you next week.